Vom domum relinquo. Est nimium periculi. Quod foras homines sunt, eos videre possum.
All right, SiriusXM 106 in his volume feedback. Nick Carter and Jeff Slate. We are joined by the great John Linnell, one half of They Might Be Giants, but a fine human being in his own right as well. His latest solo outing is called Roman Songs. That's coming out on Friday. As you might imagine, it is all songs in Latin. And for me, I got to tell you, John, the first question isn't the cliche, why did you record an EP in Latin? No, many people during COVID have taken up another language as a pastime, but what made you think I can learn Latin quickly and sufficiently enough to be able to not only write in it, but sing in it accurately as well? I mean, like, that's an ambitious undertaking, my friend.
Yeah, well, I didn't really have very concrete expectations for this. I just really just started. I wasn't setting out to write songs in Latin. I just was in a very dilettante-ish way checking out the Latin course on the Duolingo website, which is really short because they haven't finished making it yet. So it's just like a few short exercises, very easy to get through quickly. And it was a lot of fun. And then I started to think, you know, I mean, I always think about like trying to branch out and try different things. And I guess I've been hesitant to do like my songs in German album just because there are lots of people alive today who speak German. So to me, the idea of doing it in a dead language was a very, very appealing one because there'd be less direct offense taken by
getting corrective hate tweets in German from.
yeah, exactly. So that was kind of the thinking. But then I realized I couldn't really even speak Latin well enough to put a song together. So I got somebody else who has spent his whole life studying Latin to do all the translations, and that made it a lot easier.
Well, let me mention one other thing really quickly, because, I mean, I'm listening yesterday, imagining it coming out Friday and Google Translate crashing from people feverishly trying to decode the lyrics for each song. But my three favorite comments, okay, you put out a video animated, and my three favorite comments on the video is so typical of your fans. This is what Catholic Mass will sound like in 1,000 years. Another kid says, learning Japanese to understand anime, learning Latin to understand John Linnell. And my favorite, this is the dorkiest shit I've ever heard, and I've never loved JL more. And honorable mention, it's weird that this isn't weird. So there you go.
That is your audience, John.
Well done. Well done.
Yeah, thank you. It's just fun. I mean, I wasn't really setting out to do anything scholarly or, you know, it's just basically it's a kind of free form, as I said, dilettante-ish project for me. And it was, you know, I think a lot of people have in the last year been doing extremely, you know, that people have time on their, artists have time on their hands because of the lockdown we've all been under. So we've had an opportunity to expand our horizons under sort of difficult circumstances. You know, I obviously was not out in the world. I didn't have other musicians. I didn't have my usual pals, and They Might Be Giants to work with because we were all, you know, shut in our home. I basically had my son Henry, who lives with me, who's a competent guitarist. He was my one and only musical resource. So he plays all the guitar tracks on the EP, and the rest of it is me.
And did he ever say to you, Dad, why Latin?
He didn't actually. He was. It's more like, oh God, I got to do something. You know,
I've got to work.
You got to make. You're going to make me do stuff. You know. But yeah, he wasn't questioning the motivation.
Well, so far, this is also the case. pardon my, you know, ruining the surprise and translating. That's the only thing that's been released before Friday, complete with the animated video. It's pretty jaunty. But aside from it being in Latin, was there a mission statement in the writing process? Because the EP, you know, is recognizable or referenceable, I guess, to TMBG fans, but it's clearly not that. I mean, did you deliberately veer away from writing things that could be mistaken for They Might Be Giants? I mean, I'm sure John, you know, Flansburgh's absence was probably part of it too, but what was that, you know, does that make any sense?
No, I don't, yeah, I don't really think things out that carefully. I think it was more like, what kind of simple lyrics could I write that would then be translated into this other language and still have a kind of simple meaning? I think I was probably avoiding too many English language vernacular ideas and kind of sticking with the very simplest kind of linguistic ideas. There wasn't really any other mission statement. There wasn't a kind of an overarching idea what the hell I was doing. Actually, it was just making it up as I went along.
And for the people who are not the diehards out there, I've got to say all the songs clock in at what, roughly 2.5 minutes. They're super catchy. I mean, I remember I thought of this, you know, the analogy for me. I was on tour once in Germany and heard something on, this is when we used to listen to the radio, went into a CD store and picked up an album by this German rap group. This is the early 90s, Die Fantastischen Vier, just because it was such a cool track. It was all in German, but it didn't matter to me because it was such an engaging musical experience. And I think that's what, you know, for the people out there who are like, oh, this is in Latin, I don't think I really want to, give it a shot, because they're really catchy pop songs. And you know, how many songs on the radio do you really pay attention to the words to? It's the whole experience of the song.
Right.
So give it a shot. I think there's something out there for everybody, not just the diehards, is my point.
Yeah. I think you make a good point about the way we listen to music. And often you don't even quite know what the lyrics are. And sometimes you
can't understand
what the emotion and cadence. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a vibe to the music, and then you often find yourself singing along to something where you're like, I had no idea that this was what that was, you know. So it's a thing that I think John Flansburgh and I have always enjoyed about songwriting, which is that idea that the lyrics kind of sneak in a way, that you can actually say a lot of things in the lyrics, that the medicine goes down with a spoonful of musical sugar in a way. I definitely still have that attitude about it. I like instrumental music too. I think you know, you can just listen to a tune, that's satisfying.
Well, but it's funny, you were saying how you had to sort of keep the ideas or the lyrics sort of simple and non-colloquial because you were trying to keep it easy for yourself and for the, you know, but it's interesting that that's not necessarily what I would expect from They Might Be Giants. So I wonder if that was flexing a different muscle, because they're very melodic songs. They're really, they're pop. These are pop songs, you know, like really kind of old school pop songs in many ways, with your sort of quirky nature within them. But the simplicity of them is what grabbed me right away. I listened to it through a couple of times because it was like, oh, this is really cool. I have no idea what this is about, and it doesn't matter.
I have to say, generally with this kind of thing, I don't know what it means to other people. And one of the people that I worked with who helped produce and mix and master the tracks is someone who had also studied Latin. And his take on it was, well, I don't know who's going to like this, but the people who are specifically interested in this kind of thing are liable to be the most ticked off about it.
You know? Right.
The people, in other words, the scholarly people who are paying attention are going to find this probably kind of annoying.
So this is like McCartney doing classical music.
Yeah, exactly.
Either that or the people who buy this have at least two copies of Caligula in their Blu-ray library at home. So, you know.
Yeah.
You've alienated all law school teachers the world over. That's
Well,
the YouTube comments have been pretty encouraging, and I don't know how many of those people are actually already predisposed to, or already interested in something this esoteric. But I think for the people who already like They Might Be Giants, that they'll probably be sympathetic to whatever right. harebrained stuff we're going to do. So I'm banking on that.
Well, you kind of touched on this a little bit. I mean, of course, in addition to Roman songs, the reissue of State Songs is upon us as well. And it's interesting to me that you hadn't done a solo record in a little over 20 years. So mm-hmm. was it just COVID that motivated you to make Roman songs? Because it's funny, I've spoken to so many artists who were the exact opposite. They were not able to access the creativity at all, given all the downtime. Then you had Taylor Swift, who's like, here's two new albums. So
yeah. Well, I think it's partly a question of, like, you have all your resources. Like we were saying, our band wasn't available, so I'm just by myself in my house, or with my son in my house, and thinking, well, what could I throw together? Actually, John Flansburgh suggested that we both try and do some kind of solo EP project for this season, just because it seemed like an opportune moment and we wanted to kind of like feed continue keeping people entertained as much as we can during this situation. So it was actually coming from John. He was like, well, why don't you do State Songs, you know, part two? And I was like, well, how about this completely nutso idea? And he was like, that's great, do that one. You know, he was all for that. And John was very helpful. He actually did all the, he put together the, he art directed the package, the cover art and everything for the Roman songs. So he was very much encouraging this project.
Well, since we're on your musical life partner, let me ask you this. We're talking to John Linnell, by the way, and his new EP is Roman Songs. Was it 2022 you're looking at the rescheduled Flood anniversary shows? My first job at WFNX in Boston, when that came out, it seemed like we played Birdhouse in Your Soul constantly for months, and then Istanbul, not Constantinople, was off the charts. I remember the hip-hop remix of that. When you turned it into Elektra, what did they predict? Like, what did success look like for a band like TMBG? Because I'm sure you surpassed even what the label thought it would become. I was telling Jeff earlier, I remember hosting a free show we did at the Hat Shell on the Charles River with you guys. And we're like, all right, maybe 10,000 kids. 75,000 fucking kids showed up. And we were like, what is happening? So what do you remember of that whole period?
I gotta say, I'm looking at you on the Zoom screen here, and I would not have guessed you were old enough to be doing, be involved in stuff we were doing.
We're both old men, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, okay. In other words, you got your filters going on your Zoom. On your
Zoom. It's the blood of virgins I used to quicken me.
Very nice. You guys look great. Just wanted to say that.
So do you, John.
And I've got my COVID beard, which is ridiculous now, just out of pure laziness. Not because I'm trying to.
You've been too busy in the studio learning Latin. Come on.
Yeah. That's what it was. Yeah.
And you moved to Brooklyn predating the hipsters. But anyway, as I say, when Flood came out, you know, what was the idea? Again, you know. Because, you know, you guys had success. You guys had at that point been sort of a college rock band, you know, you were on 120 minutes, you know, Don't Let Start, of course, you know, and Lincoln, of course, and Anna Eng. But like, by the time you got to Flood, like, what was their expectation? What was yours?
Sure. Well, the great thing about our experience with Elektra in the beginning was that they were extremely open-minded. And this is, you know, contrary to the sort of stereotype of the major label, you know, we'd gone from putting out two things on indie labels. And the situation was that they signed us on the basis of the success we'd had with the two indie albums. So I think they were pretty clear about what we were doing. And we had also made it clear that we wanted to continue to be in charge of our own project. So really just the main commitment they made was signing us, and then from that point I think they thought they're gonna figure out what they're gonna do next, and it will sink or sail on its own merits. And I really have to credit the people at Elektra, in particular Sue Drew and the other A&R people there, who just, you know, knew, kind of had the faith in what we thought we were doing, and that worked. You know, that was I think that was maybe a period of time when I don't know about all the record companies, but certainly Elektra were into taking more chances. They signed Phish at the same time as us.
That's right. Yeah.
And there were a bunch of other just very, very oddball, eclectic things going on at that moment. And some of them sold records and some of them didn't. But yeah, it started off for the first few albums. It was a very good, very good relationship, I would say, with Elektra. And gradually, I think the people that we've been close to at the label were moving on to other jobs, and we felt a little less in the you know, loving hands of the people who worked there. So we eventually moved on, but it was a really excellent springboard for us.
It was interesting too, John. We were talking in the first hour about how, without sort of even realizing it, and I'm wondering your perspective from the inside looking out, there was this sort of inflection point around that time where, for better want of a way of saying it, sort of nerd culture became popular culture. The things that were uncool and the kids who kind of got beat up at lunch became the kids who had their own thing. And it became, yeah. You know, I say, I go to Comic-Con every year, right? You know, we all kind of have embraced our inner nerd in the 2021. But at that time, it wasn't in the mainstream. It became around that time, especially right. with They Might Be Giants and other bands like you guys, that became the popular culture. From your point, from the inside looking out, did you realize that? Was that part of your mission statement in a way? Or no, did it just naturally evolve?
You'd be amazed at how little forethought went into everything we did at that time. I think we were
not self-aware at all.
mainly, you know, mainly we were trying to do something that we liked, and we thought, yeah. Well, if we like it, then at least that'll be somebody who likes it, and if we can attract an audience, that will be a much better. We'll be in a much better situation than if we do something where we're trying to figure out what everybody else likes. We don't feel particularly committed to it ourselves, but we're wildly successful at it. That would be a kind of a nightmare. And we've seen other bands have gone on that road that were ultimately unhappy with what they were doing. So we thought, you know, this is the only life we have. We better enjoy this project. So we weren't, the key thing is we weren't defining it at all. We were making a point of not defining what we were doing. And we were actually just, there were a series of lucky breaks that we got that enabled us to make right. it into a more public thing and have enjoy the what success we did have, which, you know, was good. I mean, it's fine.
See, that's really
and
interesting.
And a really diehard core audience too.
Right. That's really interesting to me. We were talking about this earlier. You guys were always a step ahead in terms of innovation, and every piece I've ever read about you talks about how you were always ahead of the curve in terms of innovation. I mean, I was saying to Jeff earlier, I'm old enough to remember the dial a song number when long distance calls cost a fortune, and I would call from Boston and just murder my phone bill. It's hilarious because kids today have no context for that. The idea of calling outside of your state costs extra, or who am I kidding? You know, calling just as a concept.
Area code.
Now, it's an app. You know, you've always been ahead of the curve. The clock radio, that was brilliant. Is it just, do you guys just sit around and think about quirky ideas and go, all right, well, yeah, let's give it a shot?
I think, you know, the original inspiration for Dial-A-Song was stuff that had existed at the time. There were these institutions like Dial-A-Prayer. And right. Actually, when we were up in the Boston area, there was something called Dial-A-Joke. And So we kind of wanted to get in on that action. I don't think we were not innovating at that point. how do we do this? You know, the other thing was, I think, you know, there probably was some notion that we could appeal to people who don't necessarily want to leave their home or go out at night, but they might want to have a way to access, you know, it was like this idea of like, there's culture that could go through other channels besides the live circuit and record stores and radio stations. And so Dial-A-Song was like this ultimate sort of alternate idea, you know. I have to credit John Flansburgh. That was kind of his notion. And I initially tried to talk him out of it. I thought we'd get into some kind of trouble for doing commerce over the phone, you know. I thought we'd both wind up in jail. But luckily, we didn't.
Well, that's the motivator.
Literally
here
in jail. I don't know.
That's the motivator here. We sit around twisting our mustaches going, how do we take advantage of the shut-ins? Let's see.
Yeah. So not only were you ahead of the curve, you were predicting the pandemic and us all being shut in. 30 years ahead of the curve. Well done.
You know what, though? I mean, jokes aside, I mean, when it comes to, you know, just my last question about TMBG, I feel like there are a few bands that maintain their core fans who came up with them, but manage to cultivate new fans along the way. Weezer's like that. Like, you go to a show, you're going to see people pushing 40 or 50 who came up with them, but you will always see 14-year-olds, too. I feel like They Might Be Giants has a lot of that same appeal. Have you noticed that yourself?
We absolutely have, and we're intensely grateful because... without revealing my own age, I will tell you that the first people who came to see us are probably too old to go out consistently. So we're very lucky to have the younger generation. And I know there are other bands that don't necessarily cultivate younger fans. They just hold on to their original base.
Right.
And you can tell when you go see them in concert that it's a lot of much older people. So yeah, we and again, you know, we were not like, this was not a plan. We just somehow managed to cultivate younger people, and then eventually we were encouraged by one company, Rounder Records, to put out a kids record, and that was unexpectedly successful, and that has generated, I mean, I assume that the kids who liked that stuff we were doing 20 years ago are, maybe some of them are have become adult They Might Be Giants fans as well. So it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't calculated, but it worked out pretty well for us.
Good stuff.
Again, they're catchy tunes. It all goes back to the tunes.
Yeah, so when Roman Songs comes out on Friday, and good luck with the Latin Grammy. That made me laugh like a hyena, I have to say. But when Roman Songs comes out, I mean, are you planning on doing any kind of, since, you know, touring is still a little bit on the sketchy side, are you planning on doing any kind of, like, live stream, you know, maybe donning a toga and a fig leaf and maybe between columns?
in a word, no. Although, I mean, that would be funny. I did tour back in the day, back in the 20th century. I did tour with my own band to promote the state songs, but that was kind of conceived more as a band project. And this is, as you can tell from the recordings, this is more like a homemade home recording project. So I'm not even sure it would translate to a live show. Anyway, it's a 4-song EP. I may never write any more Latin songs, depending on what happens on Friday.
So there's not a dozen outtakes, is what you're saying.
Yeah, no. Sorry to say, I don't have any backup. I don't have any B sides.
No B sides and no B sides in Farsi or anything like that.
that would be cool too. Yeah. No. This was very specific circumstance, which was, under lockup.
Right.
But in the past we have, as I suggested, we've done projects that were not really intended to be front burner type things, like the original children's record we made. And it was so successful that we then were hired by Disney to put out some stuff for kids. And that was definitely not a plan. That was like just a lovely unexpected gift. So we never know what's going to happen next.
No one says no to the mouse, man. Nobody says no to the mouse. John, last question. Right. So how old is your son, Henry?
He is, let's see now. He must be 22 now.
And had you played with him before? I mean, like in any kind of real professional context, or what was this like?
Not in any professional context, but he's been playing guitar since he was in his middle teens, and he basically just went his own way. My wife and I thought we'd encourage him to get interested in music, and he was kind of resistant, and so we decided not to push it. And then he had kind of an epiphany, I should say, when he saw Paul McCartney perform at the Barclay Center in Brooklyn. And this is my perception anyway, that it was like the conversion, on the road to Mecca or something like that. I'm probably getting that reference. he just totally turned around. He was like, I want to do music.
Right. Did you play him The Statue Got Me High and said, this is Dad's Sgt. Pepper right here. This is it.
Late coming to They Might Be Giants, but he's got all his own things.
Right. Well, Jeff is absolutely right. You made a great, really catchy songs, regardless of what language they're in. And it's Roman Songs. It comes out Friday. Everybody should definitely check it out. And John Linnell, I hope you know I'm a fan, and Jeff as well. And we appreciate your time, man. Thank you so
thanks,
much.
John. This is really fun. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much. I'm very flattered. Thanks for having me.
Cool. Stick around. It's Feedback. Don't go anywhere. Corgi Tons, Corgi Tata, Dead Man.